It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and your friendly neighborhood herbivores like deer and rabbits are not opposed to snacking on your garden in the best of times, but they are particularly prone to snacking when the snow flies. This hour, we'll talk about protecting your prized plants for the winter months. And with me today is Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Specialist Adam Janke. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist, is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. And Adam, let's start with talking about white-tailed deer, because, of course, a lot of us have encounters with white-tailed deer. And a lot of us have more encounters with white-tailed deer than we would have, say, 30 years ago. Why are there so many white-tailed deer in our neighborhoods, in suburban areas and urban areas even?
Yeah, well, the story of white-tailed deer in Iowa sure is an interesting one, and younger generations probably don't know the whole story, that it wasn't long ago that there were no white-tailed deer in Iowa, and then they've come back. They, after we had some regulations to protect them, and the habitat started to come back, and they're really abundant in Iowa, and they've become increasingly abundant over the last 30 years. And they've just found our urban areas suitable habitats. There's not a lot of predators there. A lot of places don't allow hunting in urban areas. And then, of course, we don't have a lot of large predators left in Iowa that would have historically controlled deer populations. And then there's just a lot of food and a lot of cover for deer in urban areas. And they've learned to make a living right out our back doors.
So they are even in towns, and, you know, we often see them when they come into our yards to, say, eat something. Where are they the rest of the time?
That's a good question. And during the day, deer tend to be most active at night, and that's just because of, to avoid a lot of human activity. And during the day, they may be in sort of wooded draws in the city or city parks. Of course, I'm sure there's a lot of folks out there that have found them in their flower beds, especially the young ones, and anywhere they can get a little bit of cover and escape extreme temperatures, either really warm ones or really, really cold temperatures, is where they'll spend most of their time when they're not eating.
It's kind of amazing, though, that, of course, with the fawns, they're pretty small, and they lay very still when they're on their own. But it's amazing to me that we don't see more of them, because these are pretty large creatures, and they just seem to disappear, melt away when they're not browsing.
They sure do. They're wise creatures as well. So they have figured out how to sort of blend into our environments, even though we know they're abundant. They find places to hide pretty well.
They often do come into people's yards and will come quite close to a house. And of course, I mean, deer are hunted in Iowa. Humans pose a lot of dangers to deer. Why do they seem to be so comfortable so close to us?
That's an interesting question. Of course, in rural areas where deer populations are exposed to harvest pressure, they aren't as brave, we'll say, as they tend to be in urban areas. And that's just basically habituation. They're so used to seeing people in urban areas that they realize they don't really pose a threat, and they know where there's humans, there's often very good food, and they, of course, have a strong will to survive. And if it's safe and there's food, they're going to take advantage of it.
All right. Now, I'm going to ask Richard here in a minute what some of the plants that are most vulnerable to deer are. But first of all, if you really want to keep deer out of your yard, is there a fence that will do it?
Oh, sure.
But how tall is that fence?
Well, you know, in rural areas, we say the fence needs to be really tall, an 8-foot-tall fence. But deer don't like to be in tight spaces. They don't like to be in spaces they can't see. So a lot of relatively modest privacy fences would probably preclude deer. Things, for example, like a 6-foot privacy fence would most of the time preclude deer from the backyard. They want to avoid those tight spaces.
All right. So if they felt like they were getting trapped in your yard, they may be opposed to actually entering it.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Maybe.
All right. So Richard, what are some of, we know that deer like to eat hostas, but in mm-hmm. thinking about the winter months, right. what are some of the plants that are most vulnerable to deer?
Well, in the wintertime, it's basically the evergreens. Things like, for example, arborvitae. They love arborvitae. It's a very common shrub, commonly used as a screen or a hedge. And that foliage is nice and green, very soft, very lush. They also feed on yews quite a bit, another very common evergreen shrub. They're not as fond of spruces because they have pointed needles, but they'll eat them if they have to, if they're very hungry. So.
And, of course, when you talk about arborvitae and yews, we put them up as privacy screens. We mm-hmm. put them up as windbreaks. A lot of us don't think about these as plants that need to be protected. They're kind of protecting us. So what do you need to do if you actually want to protect them?
Well, if you have those, you'll probably need some type of fencing to keep them away. There are some repellents. They sometimes work. Oftentimes they don't. You have to reapply them after a rain. So they're not as effective as some type of fencing material.
All right. And what kind of repellents do you know actually do seem to be a deterrent?
Well, I can't judge their usefulness as far as how well they work, but you basically have two types. You have taste repellents and odor repellents, and those are the two common ones on the market.
And are young plants particularly vulnerable?
Well, the smaller plants, sure, if they're close to them, where they can reach it very easily, then yes, they're very, very appetizing. So.
All right. And let's say I've just planted some trees, not necessarily the evergreen trees you've been talking about, but if you plant new trees, do you need to protect them during the winter too, because they're young and tender and may be a great meal if you're hungry?
Well, as far as eating, deciduous shrubs and trees typically are not bothered much. But they can, the actual bucks in the fall can damage and destroy young trees because they rub their antlers on the trunk, and they can actually rub off the bark to the point where they destroy the tree. So if you have a deer population in your area and you have some small trees, you may want to protect them with some stakes where you place those around the trunk in a triangle about 12 inches apart. And it needs to be nice, sturdy wooden stakes or metal fence posts so they can't get in there to do that.
All right. And how, speaking of the evergreens again, if you want to put a fence around those to protect them, how tall do you think that needs to be?
Probably at least 4 feet or so, so that they can't reach in there and eat the foliage. Where they have these hedges and you see deer damage, you can see where they've been browsing, because the bottom portion is smaller than the top portion, and that shouldn't be the way that it is. So they usually go about 4 feet, maybe 5 feet high.
All right, I've seen a lot of people put snow fence, that kind of thing,
right,
around it. Is that sufficient? That sounds maybe a little insufficient.
Well, it may work if you have it close by where they can't jump in and they can't reach over. So then they're basically safe.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about rabbits, Adam. And, of course, rabbits have been among us forever. And you, living in Ames, live, I think, in the nexus of the rabbit population in the state of Iowa. There are so many rabbits in the city of Ames, although I'm sure there are other places around the state that have a lot of rabbits as well. So they're in our yards. They've always been in our yards. What do we need to know about these creatures?
Yeah, rabbits are a similar story to deer. They found suitable habitats in these urban areas, in the landscaping, places to hide from predators, the places to keep warm. You see a lot of rabbits during the wintertime sleep right next to the house, and that's the same reason you're sleeping inside the house. And so they definitely have taken advantage of these urban areas and are really abundant.
They also bring some interesting opportunities for observing wildlife. My father-in-law and mother-in-law live in Ames, and they have a lot of rabbits. They also have a really healthy red-tailed hawk population in their neighborhood because the hawks have come into town to do their hunting.
Yeah, sure thing. We see lots of predators have moved into the cities as well. I walked out my front door the other day and watched a chipmunk just narrowly skirt the attack of a great horned owl. So we see owls and foxes and coyotes and all sorts of things are in the cities as well, taking advantage of for example, rabbits and birds that have moved in.
Now, of course, Richard, people don't like rabbits in their vegetable gardens. Work
nope.
pretty hard to keep them out of there. But they can do, especially in a really cold, snowy winter, they can eat some surprising things, I think, in the winter months.
Right. When food is scarce, they will definitely browse on deciduous trees and shrubs, definitely. And they can actually destroy young trees.
By what, eating the bark all the way around?
Right, girdling that tree. And so you have to have something around it in the fall. You can use hardware cloth, chicken wire fencing, but it has to be high enough, typically at least 2 feet high.
Okay, and now rabbits are a lot shorter than that, so why does it have to be that tall?
It snows.
Okay.
And if you don't, they can, if we have a heavy snow and you have a 1 foot tall fence, they can just walk right over. So, and that's happened in my backyard on occasion. So you make sure it's tall enough that they can't reach in. So.
All right. So you predict the weather and go a little overboard.
Well, you realize,
'cause it does feel like overkill when you're putting up a little fence in September.
Yes, but you realize it's Iowa and we can get a 1 foot snow and they can get right in there. So.
All right. Are younger plants, again, in this case, more vulnerable than older plants?
Well, it's the younger trees because what they're really after is the tissue beneath the bark. And on a young tree, that bark layer is very, very thin. So they can get down to that cambium very, very easily. And so they'll gnaw on smaller trees, smaller branches. And so a tree that's maybe 2 or 3 inches in diameter, if it's an apple, crab apple, that is still very vulnerable to rabbit damage. It has to be a bigger tree where the bark layer might be maybe a half inch thick. Then at that point, they simply go somewhere else.
All right. They look for something a little more tender.
Easier
to approach.
Right.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Iowa State University Extension wildlife specialist Adam Jenke. And they are here today to answer your questions. Often when you call in to talk about animals in your yard and some of the problems they may be causing or challenges that may come up because of that, we don't necessarily have the answer, but Adam is here today to answer those questions. So give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. And to answer your critter questions today, we have Iowa State University Extension wildlife specialist Adam Jenke. Again, 866-780-9100 is the number. And Jay is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how you doing, Charity?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a lawn problem.
Okay.
I have little brown spots in the lawn, and some of them look like donuts.
Okay.
In other words, the brown area is a round circle, and green in the middle, and green around it.
Okay.
My neighbor told me he thinks it's a fungal infection, but I don't think he knows what he's talking.
Okay. I agree with the neighbor. It is a fungal disease, I'm sure. And the best way to deal with that would be to go ahead, and if you can, in the next, let's say, week or 10 days, go ahead and core aerate the lawn. And then go ahead and sow some grass seed. And if it's a sunny site, select a bluegrass mix and make sure it has at least 3 different bluegrass cultivars in the mix. You want to get some greater diversity in the grass, genetic diversity, so that it doesn't come back again next year. But basically, we've had a very warm, humid, wet summer. And those conditions are favorable for the disease. So to hopefully prevent this in the future, if we have greater genetic diversity, it won't come back.
Okay, but Jay doesn't need to try to do anything to get rid of the fungus right now, just to create a healthier lawn
right.
So it doesn't come back?
Right. Fungicides aren't very effective in a lawn situation, so that's not really a very good or very, let's say it's not a very viable option. So we're going to try to maybe change the environment a little bit, and get rid of the actual disease.
All right, Jay, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's do an email question here. This one's from Nancy in Cedar Rapids. What is the lifespan of a prairie fire crabapple tree? Our trees are 20 years old, and every year there are fewer apples and fewer leaves. Is there anything I can do to slow the decline?
It really depends upon the planting site. If it has a favorable planting site, meaning a well-drained soil, fertile soil, plenty of sun, it can easily be 30, 40, 50 years old. But if you have a poor site, for example, they just hate poor drainage. So if you have a wet site, that tree might survive for just a few years and die. So it kind of really depends upon the site. But if it has a good site, 30, 40, 50 years.
All right. So it sounds like her tree has more time. But if it's having fewer leaves every year, is that a sign that there's something wrong?
There might be a problem there. They probably can't do much. If it's a soil problem, they really can't change that. They really don't need to fertilize. They can water during prolonged dry periods. That might be of some benefit.
All right. Here's a question from Deanna in Iowa City. I have a backyard hedgerow. It's in heavy shade that's been thinning and dying out. Some Japanese knotweed emerged in this old hedgerow a few years back, and I let it grow because it offered privacy, and the pollinators love its tiny flowers. I've since learned that knotweed is invasive, and I'm seeing evidence of that in my yard. The stand has grown denser, and shoots are in the surrounding grass. Mm-hmm. What's the most effective way to remove the knotweed stands, and do you have suggestions for a new hedgerow that would offer great privacy and tolerate the shade? Richard, I'm worried already. Your reaction is not very good. Okay.
That's a nasty plant, and so this is going to be a long-term project as far as getting rid of it. It may take 2 or 3 years, so it's going to require persistence and patience. I think one option is to use Roundup on it. There are different theories on how to do it best. Some people suggest cutting it off near the ground and then applying the Roundup directly to the cut surface with like a foam-type paintbrush. But doing that as soon as it sends up new sprouts, it's a very, very stubborn, persistent plant. So it will take probably 2 or 3 years, maybe longer.
Okay. Yeah, and you have to stay on top of it the whole time.
Right. Because if you let it grow back and don't do anything for, let's say, several months, it regains its vigor or health. So you have to keep on doing it. As far as an alternate, evergreens don't do very well in the shade. They could try yews. That would be one option. And there are some upright types, and so they could be used as a screen or a hedge. As far as deciduous types, maybe Arrowwood viburnum, maybe gray dogwood. Those are plants that can tolerate some shade.
All right, and I don't know anything about Japanese knotwood. What does it look like, and is it pretty common?
It used to be planted as an ornamental. And it somewhat resembles bamboo. And so another common name is Mexican bamboo. It has kind of a hollow stem. If you look at the stem, it kind of looks like it could be bamboo. This can be maybe 5, 6, 7 feet tall. So it's a very large plant. And what it does, it has this deep root system, and it suckers. It spreads via those roots. And so you have to destroy all those roots, all those suckers, before you get rid of the plant, which is a very big task.
All right. And it would have made it into her yard because it was in a neighbor's yard, perhaps once planted as an ornamental? Somebody
planted it at one time, yes, mistakenly.
All right. Well, we'll all keep our eyes open for it now. Let's go back to the phones. Vince is on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Vince.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I was curious. We have families of woodchuck groundhogs that enjoy our neighborhood, and they are pleased to come close. I have this is a little unusual. I have hand-fed a baby woodchuck with carrot out my backyard, and then we've trapped the whole family, taken them out of town, in a wooded area, close to a stream, and let them go out there. But I'm wondering what to do as far as protecting plants, because evidently they like garden plants.
Yeah, they sure do. They're an herbivore, just like the other creatures we're talking about today. And it's a hard sell once a woodchuck's in the neighborhood to protect plants without any without excluding them. And so building a fence around plants that you want to protect is probably the best bet to keep them away, and then sort of trying to discourage them from setting up.
They can climb, at least they climb pretty well as far as a tree, especially the babies, I've noticed. But how high on that fence, what do you think?
Richard, do you have any ideas?
I'm not sure on that.
Okay.
They do stay fairly close to the ground most of the time, and, of course, tunnel down to have their dens.
Yeah, and the recommendation we often have with woodchucks is removing the offending individual is often probably the best solution, because like we said, once they settle in there and particularly have young, they can really do some damage close to a house in terms of their burrowing behavior and also their tendency to eat a lot of green vegetation.
Yeah, so the live trap idea and take them out of town is a good plan.
You can do that. They also aren't afforded any protections in terms of their lethal control options too, and some you got to get pretty far away, a few miles away at least, to convince them to not try to make it back to the yard. A lot of these animals, when we translocate them, have an ability to find their way back despite what we perceive to be pretty long distances.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Vince. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, Lindsay in Waverly. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. How are you guys?
Good. What's your question?
Say, I have a hemp bush, and I am trying to get rid of it out of my yard. It was planted there, I would say probably 20-plus years ago, and I just cannot, every time I pull it out or try and even pull the root system out, it just grows back. I pulled it this spring and dumped some solution on it, and yet again it has come back already.
Okay. I'm not sure what kind of plant that actually is, but as far as controlling it, if you can't dig it up, what I would do is cut it off near the ground, and I would take some Roundup, and I would paint it on the cut surface, and I would use the concentrate that you would normally dilute, but I would not dilute it in this case, and I would apply it to the cut surface with a foam-type paintbrush, and if it resprouts, I'd do the same thing, cut it off again, and keep on doing that until you destroy the plant. Roundup is systemic. It is absorbed by that living tissue. It then moves down into the root system, and you may have to kill the root system gradually over maybe two or three attempts, but eventually that should destroy the plant.
Okay, yeah, it's a hemp plant, so it's just, I don't know if it's just ornery or it's fighting me, but yeah, I did the Roundup last time. I dug it up probably 2 foot into the ground and still couldn't get to the bottom of the root system, so I poured Roundup on it, and it still came back. So.
Yeah, but I think you need to be persistent. You have to be more persistent than the plant itself. So, but I think if you are,
Perfect. Eventually
it should give up.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much.
All right, Lindsay, thanks a lot for your call. Makes it sound like quite the battle, Richard.
It's plant versus human, so.
All right. We have to find the strength within
ourselves.
And we're
supposedly smarter, so.
Well, maybe. We'll see. All right. Steve's up next in Clay County. Hi, Steve.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. What's your question?
We have a bed between our house and the sidewalk that over the years the sidewalk settled and the dirt level dropped like 3 inches. Well, we've taken the sidewalk off, put a new patio in that's up to the level where it should be, and I have some coral bells in there that are really nice, but I need to put dirt around them, and wondering if 3.5 inches of dirt like over the top of them would kill them, whether I should just kind of wait and try to transplant them in the spring or the fall. What should I do with those coral bells to keep them alive and bring the dirt level up?
Yeah, 3.5 inches is a little bit much. They probably won't survive that very well. So I would be inclined to wait early next spring, dig them up, set them aside, bring in your extra soil, work it into the existing soil, and then replant.
Would it work to, like, kind of fill in, like, there's like a foot and a half gap between them right now, and I was kind of hoping to get some, like, kale and some mums in there this fall. Could I kind of, like, leave an indentation around them for the fall and still plant some plants in there and then redo it all next spring? You think that would be too hard on them?
You could try that as long as you don't bury them. That's the key.
Okay.
Because some of the roots, you can't really bury the crown deeply, because if you do, that's going to basically damage or destroy the plant.
And spring's a better time to do that than fall?
Yes, because if you do it in the fall, if we have, let's say, for example, a very bitter winter, those transplanted coral bells may not survive very well.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Kent in Des Moines. Hi, Kent.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's your question?
I have a very large nest of those small ground wasps in my yard, and I'm trying to figure out a way to eradicate them.
Okay.
I've been stung a number of times. I've tried water, and I've plugged the alternate hole that they appear to have, but doesn't seem to be doing much.
Now, neither of us are entomologists, so we're kind of looking at each other. The best bet might be to check with our entomologist here at Iowa State. And his name is Donald Lewis. Donald Lewis. And you can reach him at 515-294-1101. So 294-1101. And that's the number for Entomology Extension here at Iowa State. My first thought would be, if I was going to try something, would be to maybe try to get some 7-dust down the opening in the soil, so that as they go in and out, they would brush against it and possibly kill them.
All right. Well, Kent, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Kevin on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Kevin.
Yes. I got a question about some screening. I have about 300 feet of right-of-way. It's about a 6-12 slope, and it's really dense, rocky clay. I'm looking for something that might only get 10 feet tall, and like I said, I got about 300 feet, just kind of looking for something that would grow well and not grow too tall along that area. I've been trying some lilacs.
Okay.
A little success there.
Is it sun or shade?
Sunny.
Sunny. Okay. What you might try would be, you might try something like fragrant sumac, which is a shrub. It's related to the staghorn sumac, which you see in Iowa, very common. It does sucker, and so it grows in fairly poor soils, and it does sucker, so it would spread. So you might look for a fragrant sumac. Another possibility would be coral berry. Our buckbrush is another common name for that, and that's also native to Iowa, and that grows in sun or shade. It also grows in very difficult sites, so you might look for buckbrush or coral berry. Those are both deciduous shrubs. I would look at those types because they're very, very tough individuals.
Okay. And like I said, I'm kind of looking for that suckering thing where it spread out.
Where it spreads
over the
by itself.
Slope. All right. Well, thanks for your tip.
All right, Kevin. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's try to fit in one more question here before the break. Wendy in Iowa City. Hi, Wendy.
Hi there.
What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, I grew some basil plants this year in a new spot, new location, and they were doing really, really well. Got about 3 feet tall, a lot of leaves, a lot of wonderful things for salads. And then, like, mid-August, the leaves started curling a little bit. They're kind of black on the end, and then they start dropping their leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So do I have a fungus? Are they just done for the year? What do I have going on?
Well, it sounds like you have a fungal disease. And so when the plants do die, pull those up, get rid of those plants, destroy that plant debris, and then next spring make sure you buy nice, healthy plants at the garden center and put them in a different location.
Okay. Do I have to wait a good 2-3 years before I put them back there again?
Probably, right. Most plant pathogens will persist in the soil for typically 2 or 3 years, and despite your best efforts to clean it up, you're not going to get all that dead debris. So I'd probably stay away from that area for maybe 2 or 3 years if I could.
OK, Can I put anything else in there? Because it doesn't seem to have affected like the parsley or the rosemary that I have.
Right. You can put other things in there because most plant pathogens are very specific. Something that would attack basil would not attack, for example, a tomato plant.
Okay.
All right, Wendy. Thanks a lot for your call. Thank you. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a moment. With me today, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and ISU Extension wildlife specialist Adam Jenke. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We are answering your questions about the plants in your life and the critters that interact with those plants today as well. With me, Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Specialist Adam Jenke and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And let's go next to Monty on the line in Dubuque. Hi, Monty.
Hi, Charity.
Hi, what's your question?
First of all, I appreciate the advice about the deer and so on. I've got a few trees that developed like waste last year. But my question is, I've got an area on my lawn that, say, about 10 by 20 yards, that is always brown, starts turning brown after the spring. So, like, in the spring, the first shoots of grass come up, and it looks fine.
Okay.
And then, but then the rest of the lawn just stays green, and this area just kind of dies off.
Okay.
I'm wondering what I can do.
But it comes back every spring.
So yes.
I put on like
Scotts and so on. I've tried the generic, and I've tried nitrates, and I've done everything that I can think of, which is, of course, why I'm calling.
Is that soil in that area, is that good soil? Have you checked? Have you dug around?
I have not. I haven't checked out the soil.
I'm assuming it may be a soil-related problem where maybe you don't have very good soil in that location, and you may have to maybe amend the soil. If, for example, you have some very poor rocky soil, you may need to bring in some good fertile topsoil or some organic matter and work that into what you've got. You may have to remove some of the current material, bring in some organic matter, some good topsoil, and work it in so you improve the actual growing conditions at the site.
Okay.
So that may be an issue there. The other thing is it may be a different type of grass that you have that greens up in the spring but then doesn't tolerate the heat and humidity of summer. And so it may kind of go dormant. So that may be an issue, too, where you have maybe the wrong type of grass. So what you might want to do if this occurs next year is dig up a piece of the grass, a piece of sod, send it to Iowa State so we can look at it and identify the actual grass as far as what kind of grass it is.
Okay. How do I tell if the soil is bad or not?
I would just go with a spade and dig a hole and see what you find. It doesn't have to be very large.
But the soil is the same all around. I've got a fairly big yard, and I'm in a development, and so it's not rocky or anything like that.
Okay. But is it hard, compacted clay, for example? That's not a very good environment either. So.
Okay. It might be that.
Okay. So I would just go out there, dig a hole, and see what you find. And if you find the soil doesn't appear to be very good, that it's very, very heavy clay-type material, then you may have to amend the soil, where you bring in something to physically improve it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Monty. 866-780-9100 is the number. Francis is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. Can you tell me what your favorite remedy is to eliminate Creeping Charlie and also clover that grows in your glass, in your grass, the clover that grows in your grass? White clover, I guess my wife said it's called.
Right. Well,
what's your favorite remedy?
Well, as far as the Creeping Charlie or ground ivy, it is a very aggressive plant. It's a very common weed. As far as controlling it, it can be done. The best time to do it is in the fall, and you typically need to apply two applications about a month apart. The first one should be around late September, early October, the second one a month later, and you want to apply a broadleaf herbicide that contains either 2,4-D, which is a very common ingredient in many of the broadleaf herbicides, or triclopyr, either one. Triclopyr is spelled T-R-I-C-L-O-P-Y-R, triclopyr. So either one of those two materials, and apply it twice. And basically what the herbicide does, it weakens ground ivy to the point where it winter kills. So it actually doesn't kill it directly, but it does weaken the plant, and the plant winter kills. As far as the white clover, if you use a product that contains, for example, 2,4-D, 2,4-D will not kill white clover. It does a very poor job. And so you want some type of herbicide that contains additional ingredients, like, for example, dicamba or MCPP or triclopyr. 2,4-D by itself will not do it.
All right. And we have a follow-up on a triclopyr question from John in Marion County. Thanks a lot for your call, Francis. Hi, John. Oh.
Hello.
Hi, John. You had a question about triclopyr as well, right?
Yeah. What concentration does Richard recommend?
Just follow the instructions on the label. You'll be fine.
Well, the label doesn't even list it as a controlled species. This is probably 60% active ingredient, and it doesn't even list Creeping Charlie as a controlled plant. So I was wondering if you had a recommendation on concentration.
Not offhand. Is it a lawn care product?
No, it's a 60% active ingredient. Its brand name is Remedy Ultra. I've been using it to kill Lespediza at 2%. It doesn't even list Creeping Charlie on the label.
If it doesn't, I wouldn't use it, or I would contact the manufacturer and see if they can provide those directions.
All right, and would it say ground ivy instead of Creeping Charlie?
Well, ground ivy is the common name. Creeping Charlie is kind of the nickname for the plant.
Okay. Is there another name that it might go by as well?
No, those are the two common names.
It.
Yeah, should cover it.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. Let's get to some email questions here. First of all, here's a question from Sean. I have always loved sequoias, and I want to plant one of my own. Iowa's climate supports the tree. As far as I've researched, the roots often branch out horizontally and cling to other giant sequoias. Is it okay to plant one by itself, or will the roots be unsupported without neighboring sequoias?
Well, it's just not well adapted to our climate. This is Iowa. It's not definitely California. So it's not something that would do well in Iowa, unfortunately.
All right. Earl would like to know if there's a method to install a clothesline between two oak trees that won't damage the trees.
You want to have something that would not eat into or somewhat damage the trunk. So that would be the key. What you put around the trunk should not damage it, and it should allow the tree to continue to grow. If you do those two things, you should be fine.
All right, and what type of soil and amount of sunlight does, I may say this wrong, zoysia need to grow in central Iowa?
Zoysia grass is a warm season grass. We don't see it too much in Iowa. You do see it, though, on occasion. Basically, it likes full sun, at least 6 hours of sun. And we can grow that basically in central and southern Iowa, You can pick out zoysia grass in the spring of the year because the bluegrass is green in early May and the zoysia grass is still brown. It greens up later as the weather gets warmer. It stays green basically, let's say, from mid to late May through June, July, August, into early September. And then it turns brown again, typically by early fall.
All right. Here's a question from Crystal. I was wondering if you could recommend a good ground cover slash grass mix that would work under a very large oak. The site does not get any direct sun during the day and has basically become completely bare.
That site may be so difficult that you may not get grass to grow at all. Most grasses like sun. The shade-tolerant fine-leaf fescues do best in the shade. Things like creeping red fescue, hard fescue, chewings fescue, they'll tolerate shade better than most grasses, but they still like to have maybe 2 or 3 hours of sun. And so if it's totally shade, you may want to go with a ground cover possibly, a creeping lily turf, lily of the valley, hostas, those type of plants.
All right. She says it's also an area that gets a fair amount of traffic, so mulch might also be
mulch
an option,
would be a
right?
good option, too, yes.
All right. Here's a question from Kathleen in Cambridge. She has a number of questions. One, are purple flower thistles typically a part of a wildflower mix?
Usually not. We have, as far as the thistles are concerned in Iowa, we have some native thistles. We also have some introduced ones. And obviously the introduced ones are considered noxious weeds. So possibly there might be some native thistles in that seed mix, possibly.
Okay, but if she's dealing with a different kind of thistle, and she says what she does, because she's trying to get rid of them, she collects and put into the garbage the purple blossoms, then chops down the plant near the ground, mm-hmm. and has some follow-up questions to that. Will that thistle grow again next year if I chop it down, or do I have to spray it to kill it?
It depends upon the species of thistle, but if it's something like Canada thistle, that will not kill it, no. It has a very deep root system. It's a perennial type plant, and just whacking it down one time is not going to kill that plant, no.
All right. She also wants to know if the immature blossoms on the chopped down plant will continue to mature even though she's chopped the plant down.
That's a good question. I'm not sure about that. I would try to destroy that before you actually see the color on the flower. Beyond that, I'm not sure, and so I would be very leery. Possibly on that.
All right. Well, it sounds like a project she'll be working on again next year as well.
Yes. So.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Carl's on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Carl.
Hi.
What's your question?
I've got a couple low spots in my front yard that have gotten bare this season, and I'd like to replant them. I understand fall's a good time. I was at the golf course the other day, and I saw them dressing the fairways, and they use an 85% sand, 15% peat moss with some seed mixed in, rye seed, I believe. Is there something like that I could use on my front yard?
Well, that's a golf course, and I wouldn't use that mix in my yard. So I would just try to find some good soil. How much soil do you need to bring it up to where you want it?
Oh, 2-3 inches maybe.
Okay. So that's going to kill the grass that's there. You can maybe
right.
put on maybe a quarter inch, half inch, and that will not kill the grass, but 2 or 3 inches definitely are going to kill the grass. So I would be inclined to maybe just dig up the area and then bring in what you need to bring in and work that into the existing soil. Don't leave it just on top. And then go ahead and sow some grass seed. And this needs to be done by typically September 20th.
Okay. Okay. Thank
All
you
right.
very
yeah.
much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Carl. Next, we've got Terry in Ames. Hi, Terry.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions. First, I wanted to plant some lettuce this fall, but I don't know when to plant it.
I would do it as soon as you can.
Okay.
We grow basically leaf lettuce for the most part, and that should mature in about 25 to 30 days, so you'll be fine. So do it as soon as you can.
Okay. Great. And my other question was, I was at my father-in-law's recently, and he gave me a big bag of biochar. And my garden was terrible this year. I live in a new development, and I listened to your previous caller about the ground conditions and soil conditions. And in my development, there's very little soil. It's mostly turf and back fill rock and clay. So I don't know if introducing biochar would, to the garden would be a good idea, and if so, how do you activate it? What do I do with it?
Well, if you can find it, you can just work it in the soil. I think I would look for an alternative. I would look for compost myself. And you can find that from composting facilities. You can actually buy it. And it's basically composted leaf debris, grass clippings, twigs, and things like that. And I would work in maybe 2 or 3 inches of that into the existing soil. Compost is a very, very good soil amendment.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot for your call. Tom is up next. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for the program. I've got cone flowers that did really well this year, and they're very crowded now. Can I divide them yet this fall, or how do I divide them, or what?
Well, I would try doing that early next spring, just as you see new signs of life.
Dig them up and then just cut them in half, or
right, divide whatever. Them, divide them with a butcher knife or whatever, and then replant immediately. But early in the
good.
Spring.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
enjoy
thanks
the
a lot.
Program.
Thanks a lot for your call, Tom. And next up, Robin in Bettendorf. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thank you for the program. I have a we bought a property 3 years ago now, and on the west end of the property, there's a mature sugar maple. And when we bought the property, there was a large confluence of kind of scrub trees around this maple. I've cut them all down, so now this maple gets full western sun exposure. But for the past 2 years, this tree doesn't develop a very good canopy. It's very sparse. And I'm wondering what could be causing that.
Well, it's hard to say. It obviously is not doing well because sparse foliage is a classic sign of a tree in fairly poor health. Trees not doing well tend to have fewer leaves than normal. They tend to have smaller leaves than normal. They might leaf out a little bit later in the spring and drop their leaves a little bit earlier in the fall. So it's a classic sign, but it really doesn't say what factor or factors are involved. So it's hard to say. Did you use any type of herbicide around the tree?
No.
Okay.
No. The yard is very healthy. The grass, I've got a skirt, you know, like a little bed cut around the tree at about 10 foot. And we have some hostas underneath the tree that are doing well. The grass is very plush there. It's not an issue of too little water.
Well, Robin, I'm afraid we're out of time, so you might want to get in touch with Richard through Iowa State University Extension on the Hort line and flesh this out further. But thanks a lot for your call. Richard Geron, thank you.
You're welcome.
And Adam Jenke, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Specialist Adam Jenke and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day. Have a nice Labor Day weekend. This is Talk of Iowa.